You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
We had a rather interesting and robust conversation about Ghislaine Maxwell during the newscast there at the top of the hour that we will not continue on the air.
Good Lord.
But I think the three of us are in agreement. If she starts singing like a canary, she'll be on a first-class ticket to hell.
Some extra sheets might show up in her jail cell?
Yeah.
Interesting.
From the text line, it feels so sad to hear about Ozzy's passing today, but at least Sharon can't make him perform anymore.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
You know, they had a 45-year marriage. Is that true?
Well, they met in 1979. I don't know. They were married in the 80s, so yeah, that
very,
sounds about right.
A very, very long time.
Yes. And she's much richer for it.
Well, but is it possible they had a union that worked out for both of them? And I only ask because 45 years in the entertainment industry is a very, very long time.
Well, did they or did they not have a death pact?
I'd heard that. By the way, he wasn't in the industry for 45. Black Sabbath released their first record in 1970. He had a 55-year career in the music industry.
Yeah.
Ever since he was, I think, 19 years old, he's been releasing records. I mean, the only person I can think of off the top of my head are the Rolling Stones and Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr that have had longer careers. Hmm. But anyway, it is sad. If you just got in the car and you missed the news today, Ozzy Osbourne passed away this morning at the age of 76. I was watching a story this morning. I found this very interesting, and I looked it up to see if it was true. There was a murder of a paddleboarder in the state of Maine last week. And, and for whatever reason, it's kind of captured some national attention. And they were reporting that, you know, the part of the reason that this story is getting a lot of attention is the terrifically low murder rates in Maine.
Yeah.
So I looked it up. Maine has a population of 1.4 million.
Okay.
Okay. Keep in mind, Kansas City proper has a population of under 500,000, and what are we? We're in the 80s for homicides this year already, and it's only July. Maine, the entire state, which has three times the population of Kansas City, Missouri, had 60 homicides last year. 60. Now, that's 60 too many, but what is it about Maine?
Or Boston.
The city of Boston. Thank you. Where I believe, Sam, if you could look it up real quick, if you don't mind, how many murders Boston has had this year to date?
It's shockingly low.
The last time we ended up talking about the ridiculously high murder rate in Kansas City, Missouri, Boston came up in as part of that discussion, and it was, I believe, at the time it was 13 murders for the year, and Boston, of course, is a much bigger city than Kansas City. And yet their murder rate is ridiculously low.
14.
They've had 14.
14.
So, as of a month ago.
Okay. All right.
So what are they doing differently?
I don't know. And I was on Kansas City Week in Review about a month ago, and the Kansas City, Missouri homicide rate came up. And I had mentioned that, and I think at the time Boston had 13. And I said, whatever is going on in Boston, every police chief and mayor needs to get on the next flight to Logan International Airport and go meet with their mayor, go meet with their police chief and just say,
what are you doing?
What are you guys doing that we're not? Because they're doing something and it's working. I mean, can you imagine if we could come on the air and say there have been 14 homicides in Kansas City? And it is July 22nd.
I would pray for that day.
Yeah. But we can't. I mean, we're on pace to break records again.
For starters, they have 2,200 sworn police officers.
2,200?
Yeah.
And how many do we have?
Like under 1,000, I think.
Is it under 1,000?
We're like 300 short, and our sweet spot is just under 1,400.
The police department in Los Angeles is under fire a bit because, Scott, did you hear the update on the husband and wife that returned home? They had been gone. This was a home burglary, random double murder. Mm-hmm. Remember when we first heard this, we were like, all right, what was going on in that house? You know,
this is the American Idol music.
This is the American Idol music mogul. Yep. Two things have come to light today that are super troubling. Someone, presumably the suspect, called 911 from the house after the crime. There were two burglary calls, 911 burglary calls, to the house that day before the couple returned home. Like neighbors, two different times someone called and said, eh, something's going on over here. Mm-hmm. Then the suspect calls 911 during, after, before, whatever, during the homicides. They don't find that couple for 4 days.
Wait. Why did the suspect call 911?
Doesn't say. They believe Kay and DeLuca, the husband and the wife, walked in on the 22-year-old as he was burglarizing their $4.5 million home. They were shot and killed with their own gun.
Oh.
They say that the suspect entered the home, which is heavily secured, through an unlocked door. And when I say heavily secured, there's cameras everywhere, all of the things. But he just walked in.
And the cameras didn't alert to their cell phones?
I don't know. But they came home, walked in on him, and he killed them both with their own gun.
Huh. And he's been captured, has he not?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what I thought.
But here's where, like, the first call came in when a neighbor said, there's someone trying to break into their, I can see, there's some guy trying to break into their house.
But what, as the police, what are they supposed to do? Because if I remember correctly from the pictures that I saw, they had a large brick fence around the home. I'm sure the gate was locked. He accessed their property by jumping, allegedly accessed their property by jumping over the brick fence. And I don't see cops feeling comfortable doing that to check on a report that somebody's broken into a home.
I don't know.
The list is out of the healthiest and unhealthiest cities in America.
Okay.
Care to guess any on the healthy side?
Oh, this is going to be like Utah-ish.
Nope.
Wyoming-ish.
I only have the top five and bottom five in front of me.
Somewhere in California.
Yes. One California city does make the list.
Is it San Francisco?
It is. Comes in at number three.
Okay.
Check that. Number four.
Fittest.
Number four.
It has to be the upper...
And these are big cities, by the way.
Northwest. Like Seattle?
Seattle is number three. Very good.
They're all very healthy up there. Somewhere in Wyoming, like a Jackson Hole? No? Mm-mm. All right, you tell
me. So number one, or check that, number five is Denver.
Okay.
Then San Francisco, then Seattle.
Okay.
Number two is Arlington, Virginia. Check that. Washington, D.C. is number two. Arlington, Virginia is number one.
Wow.
The fittest city in America.
Okay.
Now, the unfittest cities in America.
Well, they're going to be all south, probably.
Yeah, kind of.
Is Biloxi, Mississippi down there?
No.
Oh, okay.
Nobody in Mississippi makes the bottom five.
Okay.
The unhealthiest city of them all, Oklahoma City.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma City?
Second unhealthiest, unfittest, is Lubbock, Texas.
Okay.
Then North Las Vegas, Memphis, and the fifth unfittest city in America, Wichita.
Oh, my God. I thought you were going to say Kansas City.
Nope.
Wichita.
Wichita, all Kansas, right, comes in at the fifth unhealthiest, unfittest city in America. Uh-huh. They determine this based on public green spaces, access to parks and recreational areas, basketball courts, bike lanes, also the obesity rates, fruit and vegetable consumption, mental health, sleep, and smoking rates.
Yeah.
That's how they determined the healthiest and unhealthiest cities. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie III. My name is Scott Parks here on KMBZ. So it is not safe for work. So if you watch this, I wouldn't have the speakers on at your desk.
I love not safe for work things.
What?
Jon Stewart lambasted.
Oh, yes.
CBS's decision to cancel The Late Show with Stephen Colbert on The Daily Show last night. And then they must have recorded early because Jon Stewart was there. John Oliver was there for the taping yesterday of The Late Show. So was, I don't think this was AI generated, but Adam Sandler and the guy who plays Shooter McGavern was in the audience.
Yeah.
So was Fallon and somebody else.
Oh, wow.
They all showed up for the taping of The Late Show. Anyway, Jon Stewart lambasted CBS's decision to cancel The Late Show with Stephen Colbert on Monday's episode of The Daily Show, ripping their shared parent company, Paramount, for what he called capitulation.
He ripped his own boss.
Let me dance around this real quick. Quoting here from Jon Stewart, and I'll keep it clean, Sam. Shows that say something, shows that take a stand, shows that are unafraid. This is not a we speak truth to power because we don't. We speak opinions to television cameras, but we try. We blanking try every night. And if you believe, as corporations or as networks, that you can make yourself so innocuous that you can serve a gruel so favorless that you will never again be on the Boy King's radar, I think you're talking about the president there, why will anyone watch you? And you are blanking wrong.
So Scott said to me during a break, not looking at me this topic, he goes, can you imagine if you and I just came in here after a rough day at company headquarters and we just told everyone that we work for to go blank themselves? He's like, that's what he did last night.
Good. He apparently also led a church choir singing a song to Paramount saying, sack the blank up and go blank yourself. That was the chorus.
Wow.
Paramount did not respond
for comment.
Request for comment from NBC News. No, but I was telling Dana, you know, we have been on occasion, you know, we'll say something about our parent company that we like or aren't too fond of, but it's very rare. Because it's really inside baseball, and I don't know that the audience would care, and B, I like having a job.
Right.
And if we were to come on the air and tell—
barring something just so beyond the pale, like let's say you work for a company that comes out in support of Ghislaine Maxwell, like something just so beyond the pale that for the purposes of what we do every day, we would have to make fun of it. Outside of that,
but we would also have to be ready and willing to lose our jobs.
Sure.
And, you know, maybe Jon Stewart's on a different plane.
Of course. He knows they can't fire all of them.
No, they can't. But I can't imagine.
We can't play the song.
Dana, they literally say, sack the blank up and go blank yourself. That's the chorus.
Looking that up during
we
the
can
break.
Play it once.
Yeah, we can play it one time. And then we'll be joining the ranks of Stephen Colbert. But I can't imagine in a million years coming on the radio and telling our company to go blank itself or our bosses to go blank themselves. It would be the end of the show. The show would die before the words even came out of my mouth.
But they are comedians, and they comment on the news, and this is news.
Well, that's true. And you know what I do love? Because I must confess, I'm usually in bed before these shows come on, but on the rare occasions that I'm not, I do enjoy them. Fallon happens to be my favorite, but I like Stephen Colbert, and Kimmel's all right. I think Jon Stewart is an absolute genius, but he's only on the Monday night episodes of Comedy Central. I think that heyday of Johnny Carson and Dave Letterman and
yes.
And even to a lesser extent, Jay Leno, you know, I think that heyday is gone.
The way that we get our information like that is gone because, Scott, I don't stay up to watch that. I can barely make it to the eighth or ninth inning of the Royals game. But what I do watch, all the reels the next day of the funniest parts of those shows. Right. I watch those all the time.
But that doesn't translate into eyeballs on that late show, which translates into ratings, which translates into revenue.
I think Stewart is so fearless because he doesn't really want to be there. Because didn't they beg him to come back to do the one night?
Yeah, he's like, oh, yeah. I'm good.
Because he was tired of the grind.
That is correct.
He stepped away from the show because he didn't want to do it anymore. And they were like, dude, please, can you just give us one night? And so now he's like, okay, so fine.
Let me just correct you a little bit on that. He walked away, I think, 5-6 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. And he just completely walked away. Said, I'm not going to do this anymore. I have more important things. He's a huge champion for
9/11
first responders who ended up getting cancer from their service. And so he's been a huge champion of them. And I truly respect him for that. And he wanted to focus more on that. And to your point, Sam, he was just sick of the grind, you know, 5 nights a week doing that show. And it was last year, and he had been away for quite some time. And I'm trying to remember, who was it who took his place? Noah, he's from South Africa.
Trevor Noah,
thank you. And then Trevor Noah left last year, two years ago. And they just had a revolving door of, of different hosts every night. And then to your point, Sam, they went and begged with the election coming up last November and everything. They begged Jon Stewart, please come back just one night a week, Monday nights. And that's all we want. And he said, yeah, he doesn't need it. He's not worried about where his next meal's coming from. He's rich. But I love the fact that last night, all these other hosts, I think Kimmel's based out of L.A., which would have prevented him from being there, if I'm not mistaken. But all the New York-based hosts
were there
in the audience and watching his show. And I thought that was classy.
So what pseudo-political topic do we have coming up?
We don't.
That's going to be it for now.
We're going to talk about Ghislaine Maxwell in the next segment, maybe.
Nope, we're good. I am just fine.
The times we live in are just, it's a soap opera. Every day is like, you wake up every day and you're like, oh, what's going on now? And that's not political. I'm not talking political. It's just everything. I mean, the cancellation of Stephen Colbert's show. Who would have ever thought? Because
he was making them buckets of money.
Well, they claim otherwise. Uh-uh. They said it was a purely financial decision. But here's how big the late night shows used to be back when there were only 3 channels on TV and a PBS. Our parents would stay up and watch The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
But they didn't call it The Tonight Show. Well, they would say,
Johnny Carson.
We're going to watch the news and then we're going to watch Carson.
Yeah.
I mean, The Tonight Show was called Carson. That's what my parents always said was, we're going to watch the news and then we're going to watch Carson and then we're going to bed. That's how big he was. He was huge. Millions and millions of people watched him every single night. 913-586-7798. Dana and Parks. So this story here from ABC News, Eric Menendez, who is 54 years old, is in the hospital and has been diagnosed with a serious medical condition, according to his family in a statement to ABC News. That condition has not been disclosed. Eric and his brother Lyle Menendez were resentenced in May to 50 years to life in prison. They're now eligible for parole after 35 years behind bars. They have a court hearing, I believe,
coming up, isn't it?
In August on the 21st. His attorney, Mark Garagos, says, quote, it is a serious condition. I just think he should be parole furloughed, I think is the proper term, and he could be medically furloughed in advance of the hearing so that he can work with the parole attorney and get up to speed and be ready and do it and give it his best shot.
Brian Kohberger will be sentenced tomorrow. I don't know what time. Lord knows if that happens during the body of this program, we will carry that or a portion of it live. How do they even go about securing that courtroom?
Carefully, obviously.
If you are the mother or father of those kids, bar that door.
Yeah, you know, I went on the rare occasions that you, and I'm not justifying this.
I know.
I can understand how this occurs. But when I have seen a video of, you know, somebody giving a family impact statement, which is what they're called.
And then jumping the turnstile, if you will.
And attacking the defendant. I'm not justifying it. I'm not saying it's right. It's not right. But as a father, I can understand where you would be so overwhelmed with anger.
Rage.
Yeah, that's a better word. Rage. That you would jump over the railing and and try to, in your mind, try to mete out a little bit of your own justice. And again, I'm not endorsing the idea. It's wrong, but I can understand why people sometimes do it.
If he were to speak, would it be before or after the victim impact statements?
It would be after.
Okay.
The suspect always gets an opportunity to address the court.
And he's a coward. I don't think he will.
I don't think he will either.
I don't either.
If he were to speak before, I could see the odds of a attack increasing substantially.
Then listen to this out of Massachusetts.
Well, Hank, can we comment on Brian Koberger for just a brief minute more?
May he rot in hell, but go ahead.
I hope he does. I don't know what he could possibly say that would... You know, the families...
The families want to know why. There's nothing that he's going to say where you go, that makes... You know, there's nothing that he can say that's going to...
He was apparently... fascinated for whatever reason over one of the girls, women, whose life he took, and there just happened to be other people in the house. If I was one of the fathers, that's not going to cut it.
No.
You know, or if he just simply said, you know, I'm a homicidal maniac and I've been fascinated with death and taking life, that's not good enough.
PhD or what, thesis, whatever the heck you want to call it. I obviously didn't go to college that long to be doing that type of work. Was about a stabbing of a college girl and how police would go through all of the evidence to try to gather information against a suspect.
Well, his biggest mistake, and I'm glad he made it, was he left that knife sheath behind.
Yeah.
And it had his DNA on it.
Can you imagine them not finding him? My God.
Oh, but yes. Here's where I'm torn, though. You know, obviously, we'll if it's during the body of the show tomorrow, tune in and certainly play at least some of what the parents say or their brothers and sisters, whatever. Do we play what he says, if he says anything? Or is that giving a horrible human being... And I struggle just even calling him a human being. Does that give him, if he were to speak to the court, does that give him just more of the publicity that he so badly craves?
If you are his attorney, are you not saying keep your mouth shut?
Well, it's not going
to
change.
There's nothing you're going to say that's going to make this any better. You're going to prison for the rest of your life, and right. Thank God for it.
Yeah.
I mean, even his own defense team, if you said, you want him living next to you, they'd go, no, hard pass.
Right. I don't think he can make it any worse for himself.
He can only make it worse by talking. To me, you can only make your situation worse.
But he's still going to prison for the rest of his
life.
And
if he said he was sorry, here's the other deal. I don't believe it. I don't believe he's sorry. I think he's sorry he got caught.
Clearly. But that's,
he thought he could pull off the perfect crime.
Yeah, and that's my point. You know, the parents, some of the parents are saying, you know, we want the closure. We want, and I don't think you ever get closure. I don't like it either. But we just want to know why. Well, first of all, nothing he says is going to remotely justify any of it. There is no justification. So what could he possibly say that's going to meet an impossibly high standard?
It's just going to re-traumatize everyone that's involved.
The only thing he could do if he does speak, and this is a fear of mine, is he could re-traumatize the families.
Yes.
He could hurt them.
He could make it worse.
Yeah.
Nothing. And then why give him the microphone to do that?
Because he has that right. Even a convict has rights. Some rights. Obviously not the same rights that you and I have. But he does have the right to address the court.
All right. Well, it is my hope that after tomorrow we never have to speak that awful name again.
Yeah. I hope you're right.
All right. On to Massachusetts. They are now saying that an oxygen machine played a role in the fire that killed 10 residents of an assisted living facility. Investigators say they found an oxygen machine, okay, not uncommon in an assisted living facility.
Clearly.
But they also found smoking material, Scott. And how do you stop that? A fire that killed 10 people at an assisted living center in Fall River, Massachusetts this month began in a resident's second floor room where investigators found an oxygen machine and smoking materials nearby. The presence of the medical oxygen, quote, played a significant role in the rapid start and spread of that fire July 13th. Smoking, of course, quoting here, is especially dangerous. When home oxygen is in use, no one should smoke around medical oxygen. Officials called this accidental, and I'm not saying it wasn't. But you know, Scott, if you, we've seen people at a casino with an oxygen tank on the left and the cigarette on the right.
Yep.
How do you stop someone in an apartment setting or in an assisted living? This is not nursing home where you've got people coming in and out all the time. Assisted living, you still have the right to live your life.
Yeah, but you don't have the right to smoke indoors.
With an oxygen machine. Clearly. I mean, my God.
I mean, you can't smoke inside this building. My guess is that in any nursing facility, assisted living facility, they have explicit rules. You can't smoke in here. If you want to smoke, go outside. But how many people died?
10.
Huh. All right. And then there's this story. This is out of Milwaukee from the New York Post. Chilling video shows a 7-year-old boy being kidnapped at gunpoint as his father abandons him and runs for safety.
Have you not seen this? The dad goes the other way.
The footage obtained by WISN shows little Jamal White riding his bike near his Milwaukee home when a white Jeep circles back and blocks the family driveway. Two people jump out of the vehicle and grab the 7-year-old as his dad, Jamal Sr., sprints inside the house before later coming back outside and slamming the trunk of his car in frustration. He was ripped to shreds on Facebook.
You think?
Yes. People saying, oh my God, you're a horrible human being. You ran inside while your son was being kidnapped.
He said, hell yeah, I ran.
That's exactly what he wrote on Facebook. Hell
yes,
yeah, I ran.
I ran.
I ran. I'm thinking they trying to rob me, not take my damn baby.
Yeah.
He thought it was a robbery, but he saw them.
You got to grab the kid first. Now they did go. They took justice into their own hands, if you read further down in the story.
We're not...
You tell me.
We're not advocating that on this program.
I don't remember the finite details, but...
By the way, the boy was found 24 hours later.
Oh, my God.
And he's okay.
Well, don't take him back to the family.
Went and found him armed. Gunshots were exchanged.
Dad?
I believe dad was involved, yeah.
But Scott, follow me here. There are bad parenting choices, and then there's whatever you call that.
Well, that's not even parenting. It says here, three people have been arrested, including the missing boy's 27-year-old uncle, Jamal White, who allegedly opened fire at a man and his son during the search.
Oh, my God.
He shot at them when they drove past in a car, according to documents, hitting a tree and a house. The uncle blamed it on him being scared for his family.
Okay.
He's facing charges.
Yes. Someone needs to take that child out of that home.
Yeah. So they all hop in the car to go find the kid, and shots were fired.
Two men have been arrested for kidnapping young Jamal.
So like four men total. The two shooters that were chasing after the men, and then the men that took the kid.
The two men who took the kid and the kid's uncle, Jamal White.
Okay.
By the way, the kid is named Jamal White. His dad is Jamal Sr., and apparently his brother is also named Jamal. It's like, what's that boxer?
George Foreman.
George Foreman named all of his sons George.
And daughters.
What?
It's true.
I'm happy the kid is okay.
I am too. Why are you telling me to stop?
No, I'm just happy the kid's okay.
I'm just pointing out a very... It's not spelled the same. Dad is Jamal, J-A-M-A-L, and the uncle is J-A-M-E-L. Jamel. Sorry. I was wrong. Quick break. Real quick. Goodbye. I was just closing down my email, and I forgot I wanted to read this email that we got today on the air real quick. It's from Joanne, who, let's be honest.
We love her. She runs the entire building.
She runs this building.
The whole show.
Yes. She is indispensable. But, and she's in charge of like everything. Like,
everything.
So she wrote out to everybody in the building this morning. Yesterday, the West elevator, that's the one down by the Rock.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. The West elevator was inspected, and it was determined that a couple of parts need to be replaced. The parts have been ordered and are expected to arrive today. Mm-hmm. As soon as the parts arrive, the repair technician will return to complete the repair. Mm-hmm. The technician has assured me that the elevator is safe to use despite the shaking and other noises.
Nothing to see here.
The technician has assured me that the elevator is safe to use despite the shaking.
Well, does it go up?
Yeah, that's what they said as that submersible kept going down.
However,
further and further.
Joanne continues, however, if you prefer, please feel free to use the other two elevators or the stairs.
Yeah, I'm going with that one.
If the elevator is shaking, I'm not getting on it.
No, can you imagine?
No, thank you. By the way, just quick sports note, the Philadelphia Phillies beat the Boston Red Sox last night 3-2 in a 10th inning walk-off in a bizarre play that hasn't occurred in Major League Baseball since I was 1.5 months old in August of 1971. So the batter, I'm just going to explain this to you real quick.
Yeah.
Bases are loaded.
Okay.
Okay. And I think the count was 3-2. It's 3-2.
Okay, full count.
And the catcher has his glove extended too far out.
You're not supposed to do that.
And the batter, Sosa, goes to swing at this ball coming in and hits the catcher's glove.
That's on the catcher.
Automatic go. You've just been walked.
When was the last time, though, that was that it affected the outcome of a game?
August 1st, 1971, in a game between the Los Angeles Dodgers and Cincinnati Reds.
Wow.
The catcher, by the way, in that game, Johnny Bench.
Wow. Kansas City Royals at Chicago. First pitch, 7:05.
Do you think he can stay up that late?
I'm going to try tonight.
No, the 45-year-old pitcher that they brought in from
Omaha. Oh, my gosh. Well, you know what? God bless him. He's in better shape than I am.
Really?
I get about to the seventh inning stretch, and I'm like, it's time for a bit.
What's this guy's name? I put the story away, but the Royals have a 45-year-old starting pitcher on the mound tonight. He was born in 1980.
Rich Hill.
Rich Hill.
Taking the mound.
Rich Hill is taking the mound?
I wish him well.
Did you start drinking wine in the last
break? I did not. I wish Rich well. What is wrong?
Thank God it's almost six.
The bonus hour is next. By the way, of course, sadly, Ozzy Osbourne died today at the age of 76. And we did speak with the program director from 98.9 The Rock, our good friend Bob Edwards. You'll hear that interview replayed in just a moment as we looked back on the career, the life, an amazing career, an amazing life, Ozzy Osbourne. Sam Stevie III is our producer. Dana Wright, my good friend and co-host. My name is Scott Parks. And God willing, back tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Have a great night. Be safe. Be well. And be good. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.